Testing. Good evening. One more time. Good evening. Okay, this is not working well. One more time. Good evening. Well, welcome to Sacramento School and to the Park Rose neighborhood. We are, this is meeting number 19 of our task force. We're excited to be here out in East Portland today, JVP's stomping ground. And we're going to have the discussion tonight about racial equity benefits of Tier 1 corridor investments and also provide our input to help staffs, to help shape the staff's recommendation on region-wide programs beyond the corridors. But before we do that, I'd like to welcome a very important person here. How many Broncos do we have in the room? Go Broncos! You bet, you bet. Bob. 69. Yeah. So we've got, I was just asking Dave if he remembers the fight song, but maybe Bob does. No, okay, well, I might, but this is not karaoke night. So with...
She knows it.
Oh, you do?
She doesn't want to sing it, but she knows it.
Oh, well, we'll have to... Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Am I right there? All right, that's enough of that. With that, I would like to welcome Superintendent Michael Lopes-Sahau. Michael, how long have you been superintendent here?
This is my second year.
Well,
but I've been in the district for 18 years.
Well, thank you. And yeah. We're pleased to be here, and we'd like to give you a few minutes to talk about your district.
Great, thank you. Thank you all. Welcome to Sacramento Elementary and the Park Rose School District. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to welcome you into our multipurpose room. This was actually built back in 2012 when our 2011 capital bond passed. And so all of our elementary schools were able to create an additional space for PE and events like this. So we're glad you could be here. I just also want to highlight for our neighborhood and our community how important this work is. Particularly thinking about it from the school system's perspective. Obviously, the Park Rose neighborhood is a neighborhood that is deeply impacted by the lack of safe routes. If you drive around our neighborhoods, you'll see that many of our neighborhoods do not have sidewalks. And so when you drive around, when kids are coming to and from school in the Park Rose School District, oftentimes you see kids walking down the middle of the street, on the shoulders of streets, and that's something that we've been working on for a very long time in the district, and something that as a superintendent I want to continue to advocate for, because in this part of Portland we lack some of the infrastructure that's necessary for kids to be able to be riding their bikes on our streets and walking to school safely. And we uniquely around us have a lot of very busy roadways, and those are only getting more congested and more busy. The other thing that I'd like to mention that has really had a tremendous impact on our school district is the options, particularly for our older students, our high school students who are coming from throughout the neighborhood and lack of access to being able to use public transportation. And that is really being a school district that has a very high free and reduced lunch rate in terms of the amount of poverty that exists in this community. That's really important that our students have access to the opportunities that are in the city, and that's something that I want to continue to advocate for. If you need students to advocate for that, I've got lots of students who are very interested in this topic and feel very passionate about how do we actually ask that question of how do we get our kids better transportation throughout the city, particularly here in the east part of Portland. My last piece that I'd really like to advocate for from the school district's perspective is thinking about our community has really faced a lot of kind of re-gentrification. I'm very concerned about our historically underserved families who are currently being pushed out of our district because of the cost of housing and the cost of moving into the community, and we've definitely seen that impact through a loss of enrollment. So Sacramento Elementary School just 3 years ago had a student population of 450 students, and today it's 300. And so not only obviously as a superintendent the impact is that that's a loss of revenue to actually be able to have programs in our schools that are supporting all of our students. But most importantly, one of the most celebrated things about the Park Rose community is that we are one of the most diverse parts of the city. And that is one of the most beautiful things about our district. We want to continue that. And I think as we talk further in our city about anti-displacement strategies, I think that's just a really critical thing for our students to have the experience that they have here in Park Rose, because I think it's one of the best parts of their schooling experience is that they have a very multicultural, multiracial setting that they get to be part of, and I think that's a privilege. And but yet that influence that I talked about of people currently being displaced, because it's happening today and obviously is only going to be faster and faster as we move into the future. With that being said, thank you. I will look forward to providing more input as the school district can be as engaged as we can, and I appreciate you guys coming and using our facility. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael, and thanks to all of your team for getting us access to this building tonight. It's really great to be out here in East Portland. I'm very close to home, but I also went to the Metro meeting first, so like the building first. But now I'm like closer to home, so it'll be much easier to get here. So it's really good to be out here, and I think especially to see firsthand some of the challenges that we have here in East Portland in terms of infrastructure and safety and just getting from place to place, which is what we're all here for. So here's a quick overview of today's meeting. After public comment, we have some folks signed up for public comment tonight. We're going to receive a brief presentation on the recent racial equity analysis conducted by Metro staff regarding our potential investments in our Tier 1 corridors. You were all sent slides on this last week, so hopefully you have some questions ready to ask staff. The full slides are also printed in the packets in front of you. This is just the beginning of a conversation that points towards our oversight and accountability conversations that we're going to be having in April. Then we'll move on to discuss region-wide programs. Many of you took the survey that Craig sent out after our last meeting to indicate which programs you most wanted to discuss tonight. And we're going to focus on those while also allowing folks who want to provide input on other programs the opportunity to do so. So when we get to that agenda item, we'll have an open house style format where you're going to be writing your responses to questions that will help shape the staff's recommendations on post-it notes, and then you'll post it on the appropriate board for the program. Then we'll come back together for everyone to share some highlights from your input. Okay, so that's our brief agenda for tonight, and I'm going to pass it over to Allison for housekeeping items and to kick off the public comment.
All right, folks, a couple housekeeping things. Restrooms are located right behind Chris. Hi, Chris. Hello. In the hallway. And our exit will be down this, I believe we have an emergency exit over here, but we'll all kind of exit out the doors that you came in through tonight. There's a water fountain over here. If you get thirsty, please help yourself to food. And for task force members, your microphones are all on if they have the green light illuminated. You can mute yourself if you want to share a super secret comment to the person next to you, that's fine. But your mics are all on and hot mics, so just be aware of that. Chris is our sound person this evening. Hi, Chris. So if you do have any sound issues or if you're not able to hear us out in the audience, let us know and Chris can adjust accordingly. So we had 7 people sign up for public comment tonight. As always, you'll get a minute and 45 seconds. I'd invite folks, if you're on the list, maybe to be waiting in the wings near Craig, who's now taking a photo. Hey, Craig. But you could be sort of waiting in the wings over here, ready to come on up. And I invite you to come sit next to me. If you'd prefer to stand with the mic in your hand, you're very welcome to. But I will give you a gentle reminder when that minute and 45 seconds is up. So with that, we'll get started with our public comment. And Nia is up first. Nia? Naya? Nia? Oh,
Park Rose Grounds.
Are you cool sitting? Do you want to stand?
I'm cool sitting.
Sitting? Okay, yeah.
Oh, geez, I'm small. Okay. Good afternoon, Council President and members of the Council. My name is Nia Calloway, and I'm an intern with Youth Environmental Justice Alliance and a senior at Park Rose High School. I'm here to speak on the importance of the Youth Pass program and urge you to highly consider it in the program's portion of the 2020 transportation bond measure. Youth Environmental Justice Alliance and Multnomah Youth Commission ask that Youth Pass be for all youth enrolled in public school or otherwise for youth 18 and under and not income-based. We also ask for realistic funding. Think Nike employee transportation benefits, not TriMet's bizarrely estimated $19 million. Better youth accessibility to public transit means stronger future ridership loyalty, and a regional youth pass would increase or would reduce congestion and carbon pollution across the greater PDX area. Youth from many different backgrounds, ages, areas, and with different responsibilities can and will benefit tremendously from this program. And I know from personal experience as a transit-dependent student that this program encourages student success and overall youth opportunities and potential. Thank you for your time.
Maren?
Hello, my name is Maren Summery, and I am a member of the Mono Youth Commission, as well I am a junior at Grant High School. And I would like to ask council members to consider the regional-wide Youth Pass program as part of the T2020 bond measure for transportation. And as someone who lived in East Portland for most of my life, I've noticed that traffic congestion has only gotten worse since there's a lack of infrastructure for buses and frequency of service and also sidewalks. And there's a great opportunity to increase access to transit, especially for students in East Portland, who are much more marginalized through the rest of Portland. And the Portland City Council has enacted a climate action plan and to mitigate carbon emissions, having widespread access to Youth Pass can help with that as it engages and induces students to become lifelong transit riders as they go through adulthood. And just having electric buses will not incentivize people to have to ride TriMet, so having access to TriMet that is not income-based, that helps reduce the stigma that transit isn't just for poor people only, and is something that could be taken just to help with your part of reducing the impacts of climate change. And I would like to say thank you for listening to what I have to say.
As everybody knows by now, I'm Tracy Farwell. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with the leadership for T2020. I'm particularly interested in the conversion of the TriMet fleet to zero-emission electric buses. So far, I haven't seen any credible numbers on how much that's going to cost. I got a notice from Meredith Connolly implying that as part of the T2020 efforts, you are interested in costing the transition to electric fleet. And I didn't know that was in scope, but as per usual, the scope growth is possible. So what I've done on this graphic that you have before you, if you picked up a packet, is I show on the left side of the graphic, the light gray in the black and white version, shows how much it costs to run the diesel fleet for a year. And that includes buying replacement and service extension buses. On the right side is what it's going to cost after you have half of your fleet converted in 2030. So by that time, you'll need 400 buses. And I have factors on the graphic here that shows you we're estimating that an electric bus is twice a diesel bus. Charging infrastructure is another equivalent cost. So this is the only cost model I've seen used to get a good number. And you can be out of time and out of money both if you don't plan right.
Milan. Yeah. Milan. Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Milan Gabramlak. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a member of the Monomoy's Commission, also known as the MYC. The MYC is an official policy body for the City of Portland and the county. We are a group of young people aged 13 to 21 working to uplift youth voice and youth priorities in our city and our county. We have been working on Youth Pass for over a decade, and now we have a real opportunity to finally fund a program through the Metro to T2020 measure, a program that is free transit for all youth 18 and under year-round, regardless of income, need, or school status. This is critical. I received Youth Pass in high school from the MYC. However, many youth in our region do not have access to Youth Pass. I was, because of Youth Pass, I was able to join Young Leaders in Action through the World Oregon, Monomoy's Commission, Africa Housing Council through IRCO, and many other organizations, and attend events that I'm passionate about. Youth Pass has opened doors for me. Through my involvement in my community, I was selected as a Future Connect Scholar. Today, I am a first-generation college student at Portland Community College, pursuing my education and my dreams. Youth Pass is not just a program, it's a program that breaks barriers. Youth Pass is a lifeline to opportunities and increases our ability to be independent and move around our city. The small amount of time I've asked for a ride from my mom, she instantly replies with, "What happened to Youth Pass?" Youth Pass has been such a financial relief to my mom because she doesn't have to pay for my bus fare every single day. My mother and many other working families rely on this resource. Although I will still receive monthly bus pass from MYC, the 200,000 youth in our region will need this critical resource. Please fund a regional universal Youth Pass for all youth 18 and under year-round, not based off income, need, or school status. Thank you.
Good evening, Task Force, and thank you for being here today. My name is Vivian Su. I'm a student from David Douglas High School in Trent, Asia. Today, I'm here to address the funding and inclusion of the Youth Pass program on the 2020 transportation measure. Public transportation is a crucial resource for youth, as many of us depend on transit to get to school, work, extracurriculars, appointments, and other commitments that couldn't otherwise be fulfilled without Youth Pass. I myself would not be able to be here today to advocate on behalf of my community without Youth Pass. I would like to emphasize the need for a Youth Pass program that is for all youth under 18, is year-round, and is not income-based. Oftentimes, Youth Pass is envisioned as a program dedicated for high school students, but as a result, it doesn't take into consideration the houseless or homeschooled youth who aren't enrolled in the public education system and don't have the means to access it. Furthermore, it doesn't take into consideration the middle school students who are transit-dependent for the same reasons high school students are, or children who have no option but to commute with their parents and guardians who are transit-dependent as well. Additionally, it doesn't take into consideration the middle school students who are transit dependent. Additionally, it doesn't take into consideration that youth continue to have commitments outside the 9-month long school year calendar, or that many high school students turn 18 during their senior year. Lastly, it doesn't take into consideration that transportation is a right that all youth should have, and requiring youth to provide their income status creates a barrier for low-income, houseless, and undocumented youth who need increased access to transportation as well. The 2020 transportation measure is an opportunity to expand and implement an inclusive Youth Pass program that is for all youth under 18, is year-round, and is not income-based, that will further provide access to transportation for youth region-wide. In regards to funding Youth Pass, I would like to call upon task force members to base funding on the current usage of Youth Pass and to not base it on the expectation that the entire population. Thank you, Vivian.
Greetings to members of the Transportation Funding Task Force. My name is Lane Schaefer, and I'm a 14-year-old student at Madison High School and a member of the Multnomah Youth Commission. I'm here to ask for funding, to the fullest extent possible, for a region-wide youth pass program that is year-round, not income-based, and includes all youth under 18 years old, not only students. Furthermore, this program must center and prioritize youth as decision-makers from start to end. This past Monday, I met with various community members in Clackamas County to discuss the many programs that are being funded in this measure. There are people from all three counties representing a wide variety of ages, languages, ethnicities, and abilities. One of the common themes that came out of this meeting was that nearly everyone supported funding of a region-wide, non-income-based youth pass program for all youth under the age of 18. We heard from some that this program would incentivize youth to ride TriMet through adulthood, that youth would be more connected to their communities, and that it would greatly benefit the climate. We have also found that access to transit for students would greatly benefit attendance, reducing chronic absenteeism. Providing transit access to youth is a crucial step toward lowering carbon emissions and creating a generation of transit-riding people. Even if we were to have an entire fleet of electric buses, if people aren't riding them, then it has little effect. Based on a survey of over 1,000 students at Reynolds High School, more than 40% of youth choose not to ride TriMet because of the cost. If we remove this barrier, youth get access to many of the necessary resources for survival. Additionally, it allows youth to participate in a variety of enriching extracurriculars and sports. The bottom line is that youth need access to transit, and members of the community agree. A youth pass program that includes all youth under 18 in all three counties needs to be fully funded so that youth can access necessary resources and carbon emissions can be decreased. Thank you for your time.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you to all the council members and everyone who has been a part of making this transportation measure very comprehensive. My name is Victoria Paykar, and I am the Transportation Policy Manager with Climate Solutions. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of Climate Solutions and Oregon Environmental Council in support of this measure. Climate Solutions and OEC are members of the Getting There Together Coalition and are in support of the outline of the comment letter the Getting There Together Coalition submitted. We support all the programs and want to uplift the program we are most excited about, the bus electrification program. As it stands, the projects of this measure would reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 5,200 metric tons, which is a drop in the bucket compared to the bus electrification program, whose program alone would double the amount of greenhouse gas emission reductions of this package. Having the necessary funding for bus electrification in the Metro T 2020 package will allow TriMet to stop buying new diesel buses as they replace and expand their fleet. TriMet is now Oregon's biggest diesel consumer, and every bus they buy will be on the road for 16 years. Transitioning TriMet's fleet from diesel to electric would allow for TriMet to move from Oregon's biggest diesel consumer into a national leader in clean public transit. Not only does bus electrification have the biggest impact in the reduction of climate pollution, but it also has the potential to address environmental injustices. Done equitably, the deployment of electric buses should be prioritized in low-income and communities of color, a majority of which are also located in hotspots, as well as having the opportunity to create partnerships that lead to pathways to green jobs. Our new bus electrification included in your packets makes clear what a huge opportunity our region has to transition to electric buses. Thank you.
All right, and with that, we will close our public comment period for the evening. Thank you, everyone. Back over to you.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone who provided public comment tonight. We really appreciate it, whether you did it in person or you did it in writing. We appreciate having your time and your experiences to share. So now we're going to turn to a presentation and discussion about how investments in the measure can help advance racial equity outcomes. We know this is a top priority for this task force as well as the Metro Council. That was something that we've been talking about since our very first meeting. The Metro Council discussed these findings at a work session last week, and then Craig sent them to you on Friday morning, so hopefully you've had a chance to review them. Sabrina Owens-Wilson from Metro's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion team led this work. Sabrina is here to provide a brief presentation, answer your questions about the analysis, and hear your thoughts about what staff should do next. So I would like to, oh, there you are. Hello, hello. Okay, you can go ahead and take it away.
Thank you. Is this on? You can hear me? Okay, great. Yes, I'm Sabrina Owens-Wilson. I'm on the DEI team, and my work is focused on regional impact, so how we're advancing racial equity throughout the region through our investments, policies, and programs. And so I'm really excited to be here to have this conversation with you tonight. Okay, this is going to be awkward. We're moving through three phases of work for the equity analysis for the transportation investment measure to develop strategies for how this measure will advance racial equity. The first step is an impact and benefit analysis, which I'm going to share some of that with you tonight. That's exploring potential benefits from the investments to communities of color, both at the overall package level as well as at the corridor level. We want to use that as a foundation to identify specific equity outcomes that we want this measure to work toward, and then to develop an accountability framework and develop the tools that we need in order to achieve the goals that we set out for ourselves. This work builds off of the 2018 Regional Transportation Plan and the findings of the Transportation Equity and Equity Analysis, which is really foundational for how this measure is advancing racial equity. And it also responds to Metro's strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion, and is responsive to that core values the task force as well as Metro Council have set out. Before I jump into the analysis, I just want to say that the data that this analysis is based on is Census and American Community Survey data from 2017, five-year estimates. Is really based on where people live and not where they travel. So that is just kind of context of where of the analysis. And I also want to acknowledge the shortcomings of census data in really reflecting on the grand experience of communities of color, but it is the data set that we had to work with for this. So how does Get Moving 2020 advance racial equity? Equity focused areas, I think you've seen this map before, are areas of the region that were identified in the 2018 Regional Transportation Plan Equity Analysis that identified areas of the region that had high concentrations of people of color, of low English proficiency, and people living in poverty. And this analysis was used to guide the selection of the Tier 1 corridors, and the LITs, or the local investment teams, really shaped the projects that were that have been planned for the corridors. So the question that we're trying to answer, and we really want to focus on the areas of the region that we know we have high concentrations of people of color living, is when we say that 79% of the investments are located in equity-focused areas, what does this mean for advancing racial equity, and specifically how would communities of color potentially benefit or be impacted by the proposed investments? And so toward that goal, the equity analysis really focuses on addressing historical underinvestment in communities of color and is really focusing on those areas. Our first finding when we were looking at the people of color equity focus areas was that the investments are strongly weighted towards areas of the region where people of color live. This wheel represents all the census tracts in the region. And 39% of those census tracts have a high concentration of people of color, which we're focusing on. What's outlined in blue here are the census tracts with a high concentration of people of color that will be impacted by the investment package. And that is about 50%, 57% of that 39%. And this is represents about a quarter of all census tracts. And so when we're talking about equitable development, we're defining that in this analysis as investment at a higher level than that quarter percent, a 25% of where we see a high concentration of people of color. So when we looked at the overall investments and where they're happening, we saw that over half of the total investments are located in a quarter of the census tracts where we have a high concentration of people of color. We also wanted to look at this at more of what does this mean in terms of the different types of projects that are being proposed in the package. And so when we look at the safety investments, those are also strongly weighted towards areas of the region where people of color live. And we saw that over 50% of each of those types of investments, of safety investments, will happen in areas where we have a high concentration of people of color. And then we also wanted to look at the numbers behind those percentages. So what does it mean in terms of new miles of sidewalks, of new crosswalks, street lights, and miles of bikeways? Because these types of projects are really about addressing gaps in our infrastructure that create safety issues that result in people getting hurt or killed, and we know that some of those impacts are experienced by communities of color at a higher rate, we also wanted to look at the estimated crash reductions through this lens. And over a quarter of both the pedestrian and bike and the vehicle crashes would be located in these areas as well over that 20-year period. Also looking at transit access investments, which is consistent with the regional transportation plan and the real and focus on investing in areas where we have concentrations of people of color, we saw a similar prioritization. And again, we're looking for percentages that are over that 25%. And so investments that are going to speed up the transit system, we see a prioritization here as well. And here's what we see for the numbers behind that as well. We also know that just because there is a fast bus in your neighborhood doesn't mean that it really has an impact on your life. So we wanted to look at the ridership along the corridors where investment is going to be focused. And we, based on TriMet's ridership data, the bus lines that are going to benefit from the investments in this package have a higher ridership of color, so 42%, than the overall system of 36%. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is kind of a demographic profile of who we're talking about when we say people of color. Because equity-focused areas are still kind of an abstract concept, and what we're trying to get to is the human impact of what we're talking about. And so we wanted to dig a little deeper into what we mean when we say communities of color. And so in this slide, the wheel represents the total population of the metro region. We know that there's about 480,000 people of color in the region. What is overlaid in blue is the portion of the region, the population of the region, that lives within the investment area. And we've defined that as census tracts that are within a quarter mile of each of the corridors. And so we are going to be reaching 56% of the population within the investment area. And that captures about 63% of the region's population of color lives within the investment area. Looking a little closer at that 63%, we also wanted to understand the percentage of different populations of color that we would be reaching. So for example, 61% of the region's black population lives within the investment area. And here's what that means in terms of numbers as well. The last thing that we did at this summary level was we wanted to ensure that the investments that are going to reach communities of color are distributed across the whole package and not just concentrated in a couple of corridors. And so 8 of the corridors have populations or high concentrations of people of color that are above the regional average of 29%. And so this is where kind of we are for now. The summary of these findings is that the tier one investments demonstrate an intentional investment in areas of the region where people of color live. But now that the work is to identify specific equity outcomes that we want this measure to achieve and to develop the accountability mechanisms that we need in place in order to make sure that we're successful. And so in order to do that, the next steps that we're going to be moving through is to continue to build this summary level profile at the corridor level that looks at the demographics, socioeconomic indicators, mobility, how folks get around, affordability, and some things that have been identified as displacement indicators. We want to use that as a starting place for conversations around what the outcomes are that we want to have a community engagement process in, and then finally developing what our accountability mechanisms are that we're going to need in place. So I'll go ahead and stop there and see.
So I think we're just open for if there's questions or comments on this level of analysis or next steps.
We'll start with Catherine. You want to kick us off?
Sure. I'm sorry I don't have the slide number, but it's number of Get Moving 2020 Transit Investments in Areas of High POC Concentration slide. It's back in the middle.
Yep.
It's more a question about, and this is used on several slides, miles of new bus lanes. Are we also looking at frequency, so any of the investments that we're looking at, certainly adding additional miles, but are we looking at things like enhanced transit when we're moving buses more quickly, or we're improving frequency, or I'm wondering if there's multiple layers to that, and kind of if you could just pick it apart and help me understand what it means, that would be helpful.
I'm looking to Margie to help answer the frequency question, because yeah.
Remember, and you may or may not have been the task force where we talked about the different types of enhanced transit treatments. For 12 out of the 13 tier one corridors, we are going to do a significant amount of transit improvements. Some of those corridors were looking closely at bus rapid transit, others were looking at bus only lanes. Also, of those 12 corridors, 11 of those are already frequent service, and the other one is expected to become frequent service too. So there's a real leverage, and that frequent service that exists or will exist is possible mostly due to the stiff funding that the legislature provided in the 2017 bill. So there is a synergistic effect between the transit service funding that was provided by the legislature, and then we're speeding up the buses on top of that. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Stephen?
Thank you. Sabrina, this is really good information to have. A question related to tonight's work is, tonight we're going to be considering programs, and I'm wondering if there's going to be some similar analysis with a DEI lens on the programs, because obviously they're not geographically, measurable, but they should be able to be measurable in various ways, I think, be worthwhile knowing.
We have talked a lot about how to approach that that level of analysis, because you can't say right now, where are all the Safe Routes to Schools investments going to go? Part of the next conversation is around criteria for those programs, and how would we select where to invest, and so you can bring a racial equity lens or criterion to that, and that's some of the conversation about outcomes in the measure and holding ourselves accountable. There are some ways to potentially do analytics around racial equity with the programs, even not knowing exactly where those investments are going to be made today. So we're working on that next. We're working on the specific corridor profiles, and then coming back to you and our council with outcome discussions and oversight and accountability.
Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Nolan.
More of a comment than a question. you know, given that we, from the outset, said that we wanted to focus these benefits on communities of color, some of the findings here are not surprising, but I just want to commend the group that worked on this, because I think breaking it down the way that you have in terms of the different kinds of projects affecting different communities differently, breaking down people of color into different groups, I just found reviewing this ahead of time that it really started to answer questions that we've been asking for the last year, and so thank you.
Isn't it also true in the reverse, and that is certain areas may not have a diverse population because they lack the transportation opportunities also? When I look at this, I look at McLaughlin Boulevard, which has some transit, but lacks housing diversity. So I would say it's also true that certain areas do not have the diversity because they lack the transportation necessary to provide access to the region. And that's probably a statement more than a question. Yes.
Great.
Any other comments, questions from the task force? Meredith, yes, go for it.
I'll just thank you for all the information and analysis, and I'd be very interested in the accountability side and the criteria and how we hold ourselves accountable to make sure that we're actually achieving this and prioritizing program rollout as well through a racial equity lens, how we do that and looking for that guidance. Thank you.
I also just want to thank you for your work in this presentation. I'm relieved to see that our, you know, focus on equity has delivered some equitable outcomes. Did you take a look at any better off measures as you looked at the potential impact to communities of color, like increased access to jobs or?
So we struggled a bit with the best analysis I think we had was the analytics around looking at the use of the frequency of use in certain areas and where investments were being made, where we saw higher concentrations of people of color actually riding the lines on those corridors. It's a lot harder to figure out is someone actually who works up in the Columbia corridor area and takes a bus up 82nd. Are they going to be, the analysis of are they going to be benefited directly is very, very hard to do. We did actually work with our research center at some length to try to figure out if there's a way to quantify individual benefits, and it was too hard to actually do that level of analysis and have it be meaningful for you or for our council, so we set that aside. I think this was... we think this data is pretty robust and pretty helpful, but the next step was really to move on to how do we make sure that the investments actually do have benefits? What are the accountability mechanisms, and how do we look at the programs in a way that add criteria that help advance our racial equity strategy?
So if I could just offer one of the measures that we used with the Roseland project was based on what we now know to be the biggest indicator of whether a household can pull themselves up out of poverty is commute time. So we used 45 minutes as a reasonable commute, which for me that is not a reasonable commute, but that seems to be the kind of breaking point where longer than that, it's really becoming a burden and a hardship. And so what we did was take a look at how many more jobs an individual, transit-dependent individual in East Portland could reach within 45 minutes given the reduction in times on the Roselands. I just thought I'd offer that because now better off outcomes are one of my favorite things. But thank you.
Thank you for that. And I also at the corridor level, we are hoping to, you know, it's based on where people live, but we do have some data on people who have like commute times over, I think it's 30 minutes actually. which is still kind of long. But so our hope is that we're going to be able to look further into things around, you know, travel times and housing affordability at the corridor level.
Martine?
So thank you, Sabrina, for thank you both for this work. And my question has to do with the 2020 census coming up and just realizing or recognizing that even in the last 2 years, how much of a shift has happened in terms of where people live and what they can, where they can afford to live. And so I'm wondering if, will there be capacity or ability to update numbers as we get the new census data?
I think so. I think, you know, we're looking at this. This is not, it's not static. And okay. This work isn't something we can do one time and then be done with it. And so that is my hope, is that it's really the foundation. And given the length of the projects that we're talking about, I think for it to continue to have the impact that we need, we're going to have to do that. Yes.
I'm not seeing any other questions or comments at the time. And we're just about on track to transition to our next agenda item. So chairs, over to you.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank you all for a great discussion. And thank you so much for the materials. I second what Nolan said. This is very valuable information for us. So thank you for the work that you put into it. We realized that we could use more time to explore this critical issue, but rest assured, as Meredith mentioned, it will continue into April when we consider how to set oversight and accountability mechanisms into the measure that will ensure these outcomes are advanced and equitably shared. So it's a very good point, and thank you for making it. Programs are also a key piece of advancing the outcomes we want to see in this measure, including racial equity. These programs will ensure that benefits from the measure touch communities in every corner of the region and deepen the benefits and the opportunities of our corridor investment. So at this point, we're going to move forward to discussing the region-wide programs, and I'd like to invite Margie to give us a brief presentation from the staff on how we got where we are and what will happen next.
Yeah, so thank you. I'm going to try to make this short as possible because I feel like it's important we hear from you tonight. First, I just want to answer the question. We've seen the question of what is a program? And a program in the Planning and Development Department of Metro, the idea has been around for a long time. I like to think of it, my director, Lisa Gettler, likes to think of it as the leaves on the tree. The roots are our policies, so that's the Regional Transportation Plan. For our RTO program, our Safe Routes to School program, that's the Safe Routes to School policy, and the leaves grow from that. That's how we implement it. So all of our programs are rooted in policy. It's a really important thing. So the programs you're going to talk about tonight are rooted in existing metro policies that have been adopted by resolution. For all of our existing programs, the benefits are spread throughout the region. We have a long history, a 20-year history of kind of, I would think, fair and equitable grant allocations. Our existing programs can be a mix of things. Capital improvements, most of you are familiar with regional flex funds where jurisdictions compete for capital improvements, but they also can be technical assistance, like the technical assistance that Metro provided for the enhanced transit program past couple years. Or they can be education outreach, which is something we're currently providing it for Safe Routes to School. The allocation is always based on criteria. Having outcome-based criteria is really important. What we've learned through the regional flex fund process is that the technology or the engineering may change, but it's important to have sound outcomes that you're competing for so that you can allow those advancements in technology and other things. For the programs, we're proposing $50 million a year for all 10 programs, and that's ongoing. That's for 20 years. And I'm just real quickly, you know, what the 10 programs, what we're going to discuss tonight. We began discussing programs in spring of 2019. It's been over 6 months since this group has talked about it. And you may remember a sticky dot exercise. We got input from stakeholders. We got input from you. We brought that input back. And we also had two work sessions with Metro Council to narrow that. So all of that is up there. We refined concepts. We took the concepts that the areas, like safe routes to school, and then we further refine them with staff or subject matter experts, people either within Metro or our partners. And so today we're bringing them back to you, and what we really want input on today is what are the outcome-based criteria that we should identify in these programs, and what activities should we fund in these programs? So flushing out that safe routes to school, would you like that money to go towards capital improvements like a sidewalk or a crosswalk outside of schools? Would you like to see instead safe routes to school coordinators in the schools, or would you like to see both? So that's what kind of activities would you like to see, and what are some of the outcomes using safe routes to school? For example, one outcome-based criteria could be emphasis on Title I schools would be one, example of a criteria. So that's the type of feedback we're looking for. I'm not going to go through and describe each one because we're going to have people at boards. We've got lots of Metro staff here that are leading work on these programs that can answer further questions. There's also descriptions, I believe, in your packet. So here we go. I'm going to hand it off.
Okay, so now it is open house time. Hello. It's time to get up and move around. It's kind of a choose your own adventure type of thing. Some of you indicated you were interested in just one or two programs. Some of you want to check out all of them. You have that option here tonight. There are boards around the room about these different program possibilities, and staff will be at each board to help answer any questions you have. They may be some questions that staff doesn't have an answer to right now, but we still want to capture those that aren't answerable yet so that we can make sure we get that information to you. So write down all of the questions that you have. If you have comments on the programs for which we don't have boards here today, staff wants to hear those too. So we're going to have kind of like that catch-all board as well for anything that's not reflected on one of the program boards that we do have. For members of the public, we definitely want your input too. And the boards are posted for your comments on each of the program boards that the task force is discussing here. So there's room for your comments as well. After we engage around the room, we're going to come back together for a round robin of feedback where every task force member is invited to share some key points of their feedback and perspectives on our programs. So that is, and Allison's going to give us some.
Just maybe one little logistical piece. Members of the public, we've got the same boards on this half of the room and some pens. If you need more pens or markers, just write directly on those boards. But we'd ask that we keep this half of the room kind of for task force input so we know where feedback is coming from and can make sure that we're capturing public input and task force input. But it's the same boards. If you have a question that you'd really like Metro staff to answer about a program, flag me down and I'll see if I can grab someone to, I see some counselors in the room as well, so I don't know, lots of expertise here this evening. But we'll have task force members engage with the boards, write things on post-its, talk with staff, members of the public, same for you. We are in a gym, so do your best to be kind to each other so that we can all hear as well, because hearing can be challenging. We'll just get nice and close and have great chats with each other. Dave, you have a question, though, before we get started.
Yeah, I mean, a comment and a question. The comment is, I'll do my best. I think there's some people in here that have far more expertise in terms of being able to make these kind of decisions, so I'll do my best in that. But you'd mentioned, I mean, we had taken a survey earlier, and I thought we were going to be discussing that. I thought that was also related to this. I'm just confused. Maybe I'm missing something in terms of where that survey played in, because I thought that was also part of this as well, too. So do we hear those results?
Yeah, so the results are sort of around you. You helped us identify the programs that felt like they needed the most discussion. So we have large boards and a Metro staff present at each of the, for each of the programs that you voted as your top six. We then have sort of a catch-all board because we recognize that there are a few folks who really wanted to talk about programs. They only got one or two votes. You might also have be sitting percolating with thoughts about these programs, and we'll ask you to share those at the two boards over here behind Mark and Cooper. So you can, you're welcome to share as much feedback as you want, but we're focusing our conversation a little more and have staff support to help with that. Andy, did you want to add to that?
Well, just that we weren't asking folks to prioritize per se. We were asking you to, which are the ones you want to talk the most about or give feedback around. So that's the boards that represent those, and then there are also the remaining set of programs if you have other comments or thoughts on those.
All right. Any other questions? Folks feel good? Let's start chatting. Metro staff, to your places. All right, folks, so we have 15 minutes left, or excuse me, 30 minutes left in our meeting this evening, and our goal, as always, as Pam has said many times, is to get you out of here on time, but we do want to hear from each of the task force members, and this could be either a piece of feedback or something you feel really strongly about when it comes to the programs, or one specific program. This could also be sort of a general piece of feedback that you have. Remember, all of this is to help staff further refine the program. So we've got Margie and Andy here at the table as well, if there are any questions that have come up that you feel like you want answered. But really, it's your opportunity to share something that you feel is important that the group as a whole consider, or something that you feel very strongly about walking away from this activity. We do have a little bit of a smaller group tonight, but I would ask you to practice the fine art of brevity and keep your comments somewhat brief so that we can end on time this evening. But we'll go ahead and get started. Maybe, I feel like we typically go to my right, but maybe we'll start off to my left and start with Mark, who's got his table tent up, so he's ready to go.
So when we finished the tier one discussion, I brought up the point that we weren't making much of a dent in climate. And I was told that massively increased transit was not a question for the tier one process. It was a question for this process. I know we're not going to fund tripling the number of bus routes or any of those kinds of things in this program. But what I think we should do, in addition to many of these other things that we're talking about, is fund a really robust study that figures out exactly what it would look like and exactly how we would do it to get a bus system or a mass transit system in place that would triple our ridership. We are not even coming close to our mode share needs in our climate, for the climate plan that was written however many years ago. If we're going to get there, we have to figure out how to do it. And we haven't done that.
Cooper, would you like to continue?
Sure. Thanks. A couple thoughts that I shared with, excuse me, with Andy and Margie. apologies. It's that time of year. The two programs in particular that I was thinking most about are the anti-displacement one and the student transit affordability one. It seems to me on the, particularly on the anti-displacement strategies one, from my conversation with Andy, it seems like there's a lot of work being done on what's actually effective. What are the measures that actually have an impact? We're rolling some of that out in other areas around the region, and I think probably other places around the country and maybe the world are experimenting and trying to do this better. So I guess my point is I would just like to see that program in particular be responsive to those best practices and lessons learned that are gathered over the next few years as we become smarter on how what actually works in this space. And I guess that's a fair request for all the programs is that I think in this time where we're learning a lot about being impactful in all of these spaces, a conversation about how we revisit these programs and make sure that the discrete activities are actually achieving the outcomes that we want them to achieve throughout the life cycle in a meaningful way, I think is pretty important. So I'd throw that out there. The other thing on the anti-displacement strategies, I'm wondering if there need to be specific strategies per corridor, so context-specific or corridor-specific strategies, where maybe it's really about not displacing small businesses in one corridor and maybe it's about affordable housing in another, for example. So those came to mind. The student transit affordability, the other thing I would say on that one is it seems to me like we have, with a lot of these programs, we're complementing things, right? We're trying to make things better. With the student transit affordability one, if folks agree that that we should have free passes for all 18 or 19-year-olds, that's something we could probably do within the amount of funding that we have collectively going to programs. So to my mind, it seems like it's worth a conversation of even if it's more than $5 a year to do that, it might be worth revisiting and seeing if there's other programs that can be scoped differently to achieve that, because that seems like that'd be great. those are my chief thoughts.
The theme that I stood out for me as I was walking around is framing, because even safe routes to school, the way I think of it is if it's good for an 8-month-old and it's good for an 8-year-old, then it will also be good for an 80-year-old. So if we can frame it as that, and also over with housing, access to jobs, a lot of times when people think of transportation, it's not the journey. It's really about how they live their life. And so if we can focus on the intersectionality, an example I called out over here is transit-oriented development dollars, TODs, as an example, where Epano is based. We have affordable housing up top. There's access to transit and active transportation. We have a shower stall that allows our employees to be able to bike to work 9 months out of the year here in Oregon. And over on that corner, transportation options. I really like the theme of we can't really do broad swipes of, you know, not all corridors need the same things. We really need to be able to localize and promote diversity in neighborhoods as far as you know, small businesses accessing, figuring out so that way there's not food deserts, right? Or jobs where it's, you know, based on zoning, we have to travel really far to access the jobs if we can get some local jobs closer into where we live as well. So those are the four themes that stood out for me as I was walking around.
For me, the thing that resonates the most is around safety, and so safe routes to school, thinking about Title I schools and ensuring that there are the ability for families to get to and from schools, especially around our Tier 1 corridors, which are have high traffic and high crash areas. And so for me, my big focus is around safety and how it's interconnected with our historically marginalized populations, and then also with the walking and biking connections, how important it is to have the connections go from transit to like places of business where people are working. So not just from homes to transit, but also like that connection to where people work.
Well, first of all, I want to apologize for not being able to get here on time, but that's the way that works coming in from Salem. What struck me, and it struck me over the time I've gotten a chance to be part of this group, is a basic concept, and that is I appreciate the data. I appreciate all the work that goes into it, and the planners and others really know their stuff. But how much of the general public knows what's going on here? This is the concern that I have. Who knows how do we get to them? The example that I would give is that I was just given a great quick idea of what's going on with the Better Bus system and how it's cut back on the number, on the amount of time taken to go across the Hawthorne Bridge, et cetera, and how it may have an impact on the Burnside and on the Steel Bridge. Those are great. That's great, but no one who's driving those bridges knows that that's the case. So we need to find a real, I think there's an aspect of this in terms of communicating it that we have not captured yet, so that folks don't know what that we are in fact doing some things related to safe routes to school, not just the parents, but the other adults that are there so that they know that's what's going on, as well as what's going on with anti-displacement strategies. Local community activists, et cetera, may know about these kinds of things, but quite frankly, it needs to be known in the beauty salons and barbershops. So I would just encourage us to begin to look at this in terms of how we get this information out there in a way that is not just tied to the planners and the statistics that they might use.
Thank you. Two things that relate to this but aren't specifically about the programs. First is I had the privilege a week ago to go to Multnomah County's community meeting about programs, and first want to commend Metro staff for organizing workshops in six languages. It was really impressive, but more importantly, there were about 100 community members there. And, you know, for me personally, it's just to be in a room where 100% of the people there were transit dependent. They're 100% transit dependent. It was just a really good reminder of how important the work is, and they clearly don't feel like the transit system is working for them. The second thing in the same meeting is the other top concern coming out of that is safety. And as some of you have heard or know about me, I ride my bike everywhere. When the idea, I think it was under the regional walking and biking connections, came up and there was conversation about, you know, what about biking? People would just like look at staff and go, are you kidding me out here? And, you know, it just underscores, you know, how critical investments in safety are. So there's that. The other thing I just wanted to mention, I think everybody in the task force should know and read that Metro has just released the Traffic Fatalities and Serious Injuries Annual Performance Report, and the news isn't good. I think nobody's going to be surprised by that. I'm going to read one paragraph from it. The Greater Portland region did not meet any of the 5 safety targets the region set for federal transportation performance measures or improve over the baseline from 2015. Based on the results of the performance measures, the region is not on track for achieving its Vision Zero goals. And an important thing to know is that 41% of people killed were pedestrians, up from 35%. So if you're not in a big car, you're really worse off. And, you know, this is a trend that's bad. And the last page, it's only 11 pages. Everybody should read it. It's really well illustrated. I mean, it's very factual. And not surprisingly, our racial equity areas are receiving a disproportionate impact, you know, of what's going on our roadways. So I think it's just critical for this measure and for other investments in transportation to be focused on where the real safety issues are, and we know where they are. So thanks.
And Margie just noted that that will be sent out to task force members. Thank you.
Transit. If you need to get somewhere, you've either got to find a way transit gets there, or you got to get into a single vehicle, or you've got to try bicycle. In any of the alternative modes, including public transit, connections are lacking. It's not easy or time effective to get from where you are to where you need to be. Until we make it easy, connected, so people can routinely do it, we're going to see continued increases in vehicle congestion. I don't see that we are seriously addressing that issue, and I think that we have to, whether it's in this venue or in some other process. Therefore, I agree with everything Mr. Gamba said tonight.
The only thing that I had to share that hasn't been shared already, I wanted to talk about coordination. I think it's extremely important since we know that many of these programs are being done by cities and counties and the state, and even, you know, some matching dollars from the federal government, that we need to do a good job trying to make sure that the programs that Metro has fills gaps, makes our programs richer and deeper, and that we're really working hard to connect all the pieces of, you know, what does it really mean to have transit and safe routes to school and affordability for students if we look at, you know, all of the programs that we put together. So to me, it's not just your set of programs, but it's everybody's program that really is going to make this successful. And I had a program in Hillsboro that had to do with safe routes to school, and there were five jurisdictions when it came down to it, and a couple of agencies at the state level and TriMet that were all involved in trying to solve a problem. So it seems to me that your grants need to be coordinated, and they need to also have connections and partners.
So I agree with a lot of what's been said, so I'll be short. The thinking we've done to date, I think, has been disconnected from sort of level of funding. And so I hope there will be a moment when we can look at what the how the level of funding that might come to these programs will translate into outcomes. Because I've advocated throughout this process that if being effective means doing fewer of the things, that would be better. And I realize we're trying to do a lot of things. But if there are some of these where the amount that we can give isn't going to move a significant needle, I think we've got to be willing to focus some of these investments.
So I remember a few years ago, the hottest thing was jobs, housing balance. And now Wilsonville, I think 60% of the people leave town to go to work, and 60% of the people coming to work come from across the, so everyone's crossing as they go. But I have to agree with Mayor Gamba about we need to look at everything here and decide first what could we do to reduce the impact on our environment. And then over here when we talk about connections, there's, we need to start thinking more of a system. And the system doesn't stop at Metro boundaries either. It continues on out into the rural communities where, I was at an event at the mountains the other day, and in a room of 100 people, 15 of them drove to Portland every day. And it's because that's where they want to live or that's where they can afford to live. So we got to start thinking of a system. But anti-displacement is really, really key too. And that's, I guess, when we talk about where we're going to spend money. Because if we put $285 million on McLaughlin Boulevard, or we build light rail, it's going to have a huge impact. And before we build a thing, we need to buy up land and plan to build housing for people that need transit, want to be on transit, and will be displaced if we don't.
I have been excited for this program's conversation for a long time, so thank you for setting it up. I left a lot of specific questions on the boards. I would just say, you know, I know none of these programs are the biggest dollar-wise that go into this measure, but they are all really critical and important to communities. They are opportunities to invest beyond just the corridors, and I hope the approach with all these different programs is how are we making sure we're really holistically looking at meeting and benefiting and improving underinvested in areas with these strategically, so whether it's better bus or safe routes to school and these others, and so I'm excited about how this can help round out the package and really look beyond just some of these corridors and how are we really making the entire transportation system cleaner and more affordable and accessible and safer. So I'm happy about that. There's always more, I think, everyone we all want, and there's more need than we can address, but I'm really happy to see these priorities move forward and get clarity about, as Nolan was saying, kind of how are we fully funding these programs and making sure they're really transformational and we're not just doing piecemeal components of them. That would be one remaining question.
Thanks. It's hard near the end. There's not a lot to add. So I love the equity conversation we had. So that was very helpful. And I'm glad that's a top lens. The anti-displacement, I totally agree. I mean, I see it in the building industry, and it's just how it happens. If you don't think about that in advance, it's just where the market goes. And you can't necessarily blame anyone except ourselves if we're not thinking about that in advance and taking actions ahead of time. The safety, to me, is a key one. But then we look at some of these, and I was more focused on this side of the room. I didn't get over there, but on the buses, it said something about, you know, do we focus on schools or jobs or town centers or typical daily destinations? And to me, it's if you're looking at congestion, you have to look at, well, what are the times you're going to also relieve? Assuming we've got the equity, assuming we've got the safety piece, the anti-displacement piece, then where are we going to invest that's going to help with the congestion piece? And that's going to be at key times of the day where we know that congestion is worse. So how, if we're having to make these decisions with limited dollars, looking at that as well, too, after those other pieces have been considered.
I get the last word. Well, I'm going to circle back around. I know this is a small group, but I'm really struck by how far we've come in the last, year-ish? There's a lot of consensus around the table that I don't think we necessarily had in the beginning, especially when it comes to racial equity, the focus on public transit and anti-displacement. I agree with Mayor Gamba. I think we, by and large, chose really good corridors, but we are looking at discrete corridors rather than the entire system, and I really would love analysis of what it would take to have a, I hate this word, I'm going to say it, robust public transit system. I know that 50% of Portlanders live within a quarter mile of a frequent transit line. What would it take for the other 50% to live within a quarter mile and then across the region? So I want to put my plug in for the anti-displacement programming dollars. So we have got to stop this vicious cycle of investing public dollars to solve problems like inequity and carbon emissions and the lack of adequate transit, which then drives displacement of the very people that we're trying to serve. And the people who benefit from those public investment of public dollars are property owners. So anti-displacement measures have to be embedded in every corridor project. And that, I would argue that 2% needs to remain in the corridors and not dumped into the larger pot for developing anti-displacement strategies. It's now that I've done almost everything I can to stabilize renters, anti-displacement is my new favorite thing. So I'm ready, willing, and able to work with all of you on those issues. It's still happening. It's still spreading across our region, and we have to do something to stop it. Or we're going to be chasing this problem into the Pacific Ocean. Thank you.
So thanks everybody for the comments. First of all, I wanted to thank Susan and Lou for being here tonight, but I also want to thank you for showing up for work every day. Yeah. okay, that aside. One of the things that I just was that echoed some of the things that I heard tonight about making sure that the investments we're making in these programs are impactful. It raised a question for me around the future corridor planning. I think I really want to make sure that the dollars we're asking taxpayers to pay are going to give like results that they can see and things that we can point to. So I just want us to be, you know, aware of like how much we're actually doing for projects that are going to be built, and then how much or programs are going to be put in place, and then how much we're spending on planning, you know, for things. I think people want to see actually things getting done. I'm right there with everybody on the anti-displacement. I think that, you know, as we're talking about investments that we're making, especially in East Portland and East County and other areas of the region that haven't had the investment, you know, we know that when you make investment, people get moved out of the area involuntarily, and we've seen that happen here. And so I think that we have to make that a priority because we need to make those safety improvements. We need to make those better bus improvements to get people around, but we also need to keep people where they're living. And then I didn't list this in the survey as one of my things that I wanted to talk more about, but I am really excited about the idea of using this for some dollars for electric buses to help make that transition. I think that's one of the smartest things we can do is get our fleet switched over for climate. And then the same thing, I know there's been a lot of talk over the years about how to get a funding source for student transit, and I think this is our opportunity to really make that investment and to make that commitment and really solve a problem that's been talked about for a long, long time.
So I'd also like to thank all of you for your comments, and I'd like to make a couple comments from my perspective as a task force member that I haven't heard around the table. And one is the focus on active transportation regional connections. I think we do need additional funding that supports the completion of the active transportation networks on major roads and trails across the region and across the county. And when I look at Washington County and specifically, I'd say that, for example, there are critical connections along the West Side Trail, Fano Creek, that actually have great access to job centers, and we could build that out more effectively than we have in that county. So I want to make a plug for the concept of active transportation and those regional connections. The other thing that I'd like to bring up is the Main Street Revitalization Program, and the fact that if we work early on Main Street revitalization programs, we have the opportunity to really focus on things like complete streets early. And this goes back to what Mayor Gambo was saying about, I believe it was part of the Sunrise Corridors, is doing it right the first time. So those are the two things that I would want to encourage us to look at as well. And before JVP closes, I just want to say thank you for coming tonight, and it was great to have you out here in Park Rose.
You do get to talk one more time.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't now.
So we're right at the end time, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. But I want to just thank everybody for their great engagement today. Thank you for those of you in the audience who shared your questions and comments as well. Staff are going to call out our input in the engagement report later this month, so including with the written input that we got today. If you have any further input that you didn't get a chance to give tonight, please let staff know, and they'll make sure that that's included in the report as well. And this report will directly inform staff's recommendation to Metro Council. So our next meeting is March 18th. We will be back at Metro, so follow me there. And we're going to be returning to our discussion of the Tier 2 corridors. So jurisdictional staff have received the questions that you had on the that you raised at and after the last task force meeting when we had those presentations, and they're working on written responses that we'll receive before that meeting. These will be sent to you next week, along with any changes that there might be for those jurisdictional proposals.
I'm really not scripted, so have a good evening.
So we're not going to have a formal vote on the Tier 2 proposals like we did for Tier 1. There hasn't been as much time for engagement. There hasn't been as much time for vetting the proposals as we did for the Tier 1, so it doesn't seem like it's really the right mechanisms. But they're going to make sure that there's a way for us to share our thoughts, our comments, kind of where we're thinking on the proposed construction or planning investments in the Tier 2 corridors to advance the ones that advance our values. So they're going to structure the meeting in the way that makes sure that it's captured, even though there won't be a formal vote. And we'll also work to identify which opinions are commonly shared to get a sense of where we stand as a group about those. So stay tuned. There's going to be more materials coming before that meeting with some of those responses. Thanks, everybody, for being here tonight, and we will see you in 2 weeks.